Well, hi there. Good morning to everybody. The first thing I want to do is thank the committee, thank the board, thank whoever it is that's responsible for Robert and me being here this weekend. It's been a great experience. It's been such a joy to renew old relationships. That's one of the perks, one of the benefits, one of the bonuses of not drinking and not dying and hanging around here and staying, occupying a seat in the meeting. You meet folks, and if you get out and get to be a convention junkie like I did early on, then you know folks in strange places, you know. They're not as strange as they used to be, but anyway, our paths cross and they cross, and then to meet the people that we've met here for the first time. Arlene, it'll be all right, darling. Yes, put that little smile back on your face. There you go. All right. We are very, very glad to be here. It's the first time we've been in this part of the country, and we have thoroughly enjoyed it. And your Smokies or your Cumberlands or whatever you call this thing we're on here do not compare to our Ozarks. And that's not a negative. It's just like personalities in AA. Everybody's got one, you know. And we try to put our principles over our personalities. And our mountains are just different from y'all's. That was such a thrill for me. I love to see the countryside. And Friday, we came in Thursday. And Friday, we took a little tour down towards Chattanooga and went down and saw Ruby Falls. And if that isn't a piece of God's handiwork, I will tell you. So the whole experience has just been great. And so we're so pleased to be here. And now we're going to work hard at getting Margaret out of the way and let God take over. That's going to take a few minutes, and I bet you can tell when it happens. And first thing I'm going to tell you is, now listen real close. Listen to this real close, because you're going to hear a big part of my story right now when I tell you who I am and what I am and all that good stuff. And then if you want to nap, because I know some of us didn't sleep well last night, well, you can just go on and nap. You're going to miss some good stuff, though, if you do, I tell you. My name is... Are your seatbelts fastened? My name is Margaret Ann Baker Bice Brown Brown House Barris, and I am a real alcoholic. Why are you clapping for that? All you have to do to have all those names is be a woman and be a pleasure seeker. I mean... Oh, shoot. My home group is the Pinnacle Mountain Group in Little Rock, Arkansas, and it's been my home group for many, many, many years. My sobriety date is April 14th, 1976. When I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I came into a group, and I was welcomed into that group. My sponsor, I was assigned a sponsor. I didn't go into the meeting rooms and look around and find somebody that I liked the sparkle in their eyes. In fact, the first meeting I attended was 6 years before my sobriety date, and I was assigned a sponsor then. And then I was assigned a sponsor 2 years later. And then I was assigned another sponsor. So what is that telling you? It tells you and it tells me that sponsors don't get you sober. Okay? Sponsors do not get you sober. So, you know, I know that there's enough people here today that already know everything I'm going to say except for my individual story. There's a philosopher that says there are but two or three basic human stories, and they keep repeating themselves as fiercely as if they had never happened. And I believe that with all my heart today. I have been to enough conventions, and I've been to enough eating meetings and speaker meetings that I've heard so many stories. But you know what? We've got a common problem, and it's called alcoholism. And I've still got it. The difference in me today and the girl that came to you in 1976 when I had my last drink was, today I have some tools. One of the problems I still have, though, is that it's up to me to pick up those tools. It's up to me to use what you all have given me and continue to give me as long as I show up in these rooms and have active sponsorship. I'll be 65 years old January 31st of next year. I've already got my Medicare card, and I'm so proud. I am so proud. I mean, oh, yeah, we're going to clap for that, too. Yay. Yay. I'm telling you, just don't drink and don't die, and you'll get here. I was born and raised in Little Rock, and I came from an average middle-class family. I could tell you some real special stuff that I was so proud of my daddy. And back in those days, I was not so proud of my mother, but I can tell you that I am now. You know, you show me a drunk, and I'm going to show you somebody with a mama problem. We all got mama problems. And don't sit there and disagree with me, because I have sponsored enough girls over these past 27 years in sobriety. Everyone has come to me with some kind of a mama problem. And my mother tried. Oh, she tried, and she was a lovely lady. But it would still always surprise me when we'd go somewhere and mother wasn't around, and they'd say, oh, so-and-so about my mother. And they'd say, oh, she is just, and I'm looking at, you know, they're talking about how wonderful my mother is, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, are we talking about the same woman? You know, are we talking about the same woman? Well, guess what the problem really was? It was me. It was me. I was a little rebel from the get-go. Pictures of me, the snapshots, you know, families, a lot of families take a lot of pictures, and mine did. And all the pictures in the little family album of me is a little 2-year-old or 1-year-old, and Mama put the little ribbons and had the little, I called them wienerwurst curls and all that kind of stuff, and the little frilly dresses. I had no smile on my face, and my lip was sticking out because I had a feeling. And I can still get that feeling today, and I can still get that look today. Somebody down here on the front row is really, yeah, she's really seen that look. Well, more than all of them on the front row, except for those, anyway. Oh, dear. I have a brother that's 10 years older than me, and I think that he never did anything wrong. Never. And so I'm in the shadow of this wonderful person. And I was in his hair then, and I'm in his hair today. He was popular. He was well-liked. People mentioned his name, and they'd smile, you know, and it was like that. And so then here comes Margaret. But let me tell you, the ABCs that Darla just read, no human power could relieve our alcoholism, only God if he were sought. I think they kind of trained me to be like I am, you know. I just have always thought that a man could fix me. I just always have. You know, when I was born in 1939, we had no air conditioning. I know there's not many of you all that can remember those days, but I see a lady smiling back there that can. We had an attic fan. I remember when they installed the attic fan. That was wonderful. But before then, and when I was born, when I came into the world, there were no attic fans, and they had windows open. We lived on a corner, and there was a big old oak tree out there in the front yard, and the neighbors would gather after dinner under that oak tree and try to catch the evening breeze and cool off in the hot summertime. And Mother would make James stay in the house with me, sitting by my crib, holding my hand until I went to sleep. And I've been trying to find a man all my life that would sit by my crib and hold my hand while I went to sleep. Well, I'm not hunting anymore. In fact, I didn't really find the person that was meant to be until I quit hunting. And that's kind of how my childhood was. I was given piano lessons, dancing lessons, voice lessons. I took piano for 12 years, and I think Mother had, well, we think, you know, our parents, they I know, because I've had the same feeling about my boys. They try to help us in our lives to have what they didn't have. And you know, my folks, like a lot of y'all's, were of the Depression time, and they didn't have a lot. And so they tried to give us things, and mine did. And a lot of these little girls that I sponsor today, golly, woo, oh man, oh man, oh man. I call it spoiled brat syndrome. That's what I call it. And I had it. I had it, only I didn't think so. I thought I was put upon, and I thought it was this and this and this. Now, we can't call somebody else an alcoholic, but I think that my daddy may have been one. And if he was, he was a periodic, because periodically daddy was gone for a few days, and he'd come back looking real bad. And mama was, you know. And back in those days, AA was beginning to be more prevalent, but I honestly had not heard of Al-Anon until I started trying to come to AA. And so she was a fine Christian woman. And I was born and raised in the First Baptist Church at 12th in Louisiana, Little Rock, Arkansas, and I gave my life to Christ when I was 9 years old. And it was a real experience, and I sure am glad that that happened for me, because I think Mama carried me to church, carried, you know, vacation Bible school and all those things, and she brought me up right. Yeah, she brought me up right. And I'm so grateful, because I believe that maybe, I don't know, but this is what I think, that maybe it kept me from blowing my brains out at some point in time. I don't know. But that's kind of how all that went along. And then I went on through school, and you know, it's something about hearing speakers and how you talk and all that sort of thing, and when that first drink occurred. Well, it was no big deal for me. And where's Chet? Is Chet here? There he is. Chet and I like to play devil's advocate. And there were so many things when I came into AA that first time, and then even in 1976, that, you know, I feel different enough all by myself. I'm just not worth anything. I have no self-esteem. And then you put me over here two steps, and I am gorgeous, and we can do anything, and let's go, and we'll get the money, don't worry about it, and everything. You know, it's just that Jekyll and Hyde, and, you know, the wind blows, and I'll cry, and then you come back, and just change and change and change. But I, my first drink did nothing for me. My parents did not keep alcohol in the home. Now, I say that, and then I'll turn around and tell you that they had a fifth of bourbon on the shelf in the closet. And they didn't bring that down except when Aunt Wilma and Uncle Doyle came from St. Louis on holiday occasions, and they had these beautiful little crystal shot glasses. And my mother never drank except at occasions like that. And I would see my mother stand there and take a little shot glass of bourbon and just drink it, and I'd think, I think that stuff doesn't taste good, and I don't understand why Mama's doing that. But anyway, that's just little things that go on in my mind. And we go to church every Sunday, and drinking's not good. And there were a lot of things that church said that weren't good that I just really, you know, they said dancing wasn't good, and I was dancing. And I love dancing. So the mixed deal starts, and I blamed everybody but myself for decades. And as I go along through my story, maybe even you will tend. It depends on the inflection of my voice and how much I really want to impress you and how much I want to get you on my side. But no wonder she drank. Oh, yeah. I played that one a long time. Played that tune a long, long time. But my family didn't keep alcohol in the home, quote, unquote. And we went to a family affair in North Little Rock, and there were cocktails served and so forth. And, oh, I was probably sixth grade or something like that, about 12, 13 years old. And my Aunt Connie said to my mother, would it be all right if Margaret Ann has just a little, you know, family, Margaret Ann, the double name, Stillo. Anyway, just have Margaret Ann just have a little glass of Mug and David wine. And Mother says, well, that'll be all right. And I think, that'll be all right. Oh, okay. It just a little bit won't hurt you. And so I had this little glass of Mug and David wine. I did not run out of the door looking for the nearest little boy or run up and down the street jerking my clock. I did not. It might have had a little tingle on my nose, but that was about it. But let me tell you what, when I got to high school, now's when we start having fun. And something else I'm going to tell you, A.A. Al-Anon, Al-A-Tot, Al-A-Dog. Water seeks its level, okay? I am a people pleaser from the word go until I get enough of it, and then I'm going to turn around and I'm going to do something totally different. It's the Jekyll and Hyde thing again. I know all this now. I knew nothing of this 30 years ago. 27 for sure. Probably 10. How about yesterday? God's not through with me yet. We're still learning stuff here. You know, the book tells me all this stuff. This is my book. This is my book. I'm so proud of this book that I could just holler. I could just shout. This is a second edition copy of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This book here is just as good. It's just not mine. And you know why it's just as good? Because the first 164 pages in this book are just like the first 164 pages in this book. And today, if you are like me, sometimes you get weary, you get complacent, you get bored, you get tired of the whiny crybabies, little prospects and all of this stuff, and why am I still here? I know why I'm here, and I hope that when you walk off or drive off of this mountain that you understand why you're here and can have a new commitment about it. I am here because God's not through with me yet, and my mission, what is it? To share my experience, strength, and hope with each other and to help the alcoholic who still suffers. That's my mission. And if you don't have one, I hope you get one real quick, because I feel real sorry for you. You're missing it. You're missing the whole show. God's got a show going on that'll beat anything. It's the best show in town for a buck. Where else can you go and have so much fun? And oh, I am preaching again. I'll do that. I'll do that a lot. Okay, so we get the Mug and David wine, and then we get to high school. And I've already told you what kind of girl I am. I really like boys, and I really like dancing. I really like having a good time. And if I see somebody having a good time, then I'm going to go try to find out what they're doing. And yet, on the other hand, I'm shy. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to act. I don't know. You know, Mama taught me all the graces and all that sort of thing. I mean, she really tried. But some of the things I feel sorry for these young people about that they're missing are drive-in movies. Oh, come on, you can do better than that. How about back row of drive-in movies? There's a few more. Well, it's not noon yet. I know some of you are napping. I told you you could. It's okay. So started doing that, and I'm a girl of the 50s, and they were the best. That was Elvis Presley. I saw Elvis Presley in 1954 at the Robinson Auditorium in Little Rock, Arkansas, and he was good. Oh, yeah, he was really good. He was real good then. And we just had a big time. We had a big time. And part of the time I thought I was having a good time, and part of the time I wasn't fitting in. And I had to come to you and find out that I was really fitting in all the time. It was just that I have an ism, and it's called I, Self, and Me. And when I get that way, it's all about I, Self, and Me. And you don't count at all. You don't count at all. And if you count, it's because it's your fault. Today. Robert's laughing. He knows that. He knows how that drill goes. He knows that we don't play games. So we go to the drive-in movie. I'm going to use that as an example. And they'd pop that turtle, and they'd have a case of beer or a fifth of whiskey, and they'd pass it around. And I didn't like beer the first time I tasted it, but, man, you do what they're doing, and you develop a taste for it, and it didn't take me long. And I liked the feeling that it gave me. And I'm not one of those people. This is another one of those things that I was different about. I did not, when I started drinking, drink it all and throw up and continue to do that. Man, I had a ball drinking for a long time. Now, I think that I thought I was having more fun than I was really having. Because there would end up being something wrong, and then I'd end up crying or mad, or, you know, there would be an ultimate cost. And one time at the drive-in, I had a date with this boy, and they passed this little bottle around, and I didn't really pay any attention to what anybody else was doing. I was just doing it. And I think I took more than my share, and he got mad at me, and I didn't understand that. And that's just kind of how all that went. And then it came time to go graduate from high school, and I went to go to the University of Arkansas, where all my friends were going, and that was the place to go. Razorbacks, go Hogs, you know, all that fun, great stuff. You know, forget what you're going to be when you grow up. We're talking about, my mother told me a long time ago, she says, you just live for the moment. See, I've been doing this one day at a time thing a long time. A different little perception there of what I do now and what I did back then. I wanted to go to the university, and if you remember, I told you that I went to the First Baptist Church. And Mother, I had a curfew. I had to be in at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock was early back then. My friends could stay out until 12 or 12:30, and so I did. It's just rebel, rebel, rebel. If she told me to do something, I'd do this, and then I'd feel bad, and I'd feel guilty. Shame, guilt, and remorse is just building. It's just building. You know, we build towers. We build towers until we finally get here, if we get here. And Mama usually got her way, and Mother and Daddy took me down across the state line, down through Texarkana, down through Tyler, and down to Waco, Texas. And Mama left me down there like a little fish in a big pond on the university at Baylor, that good old Baylor line. Well, I will tell you that I did go to church down there a time or two because, I don't remember much about it, because Mama said that those people in that church down there said that you had so much potential. Y'all ever had any potential? Yeah, we had potential. And I found him. He was there. He was waiting on me. He didn't know it. This begins a series of all those names. And out of all those names and through a number of years, the drinking increases. Three beautiful little boys, three absolutely beautiful little boys, a 13-year alcoholic marriage. That's the brown. Can you figure that one out? Margaret, why don't you leave him? He's laying up in bed drunk and I'm working. I went to work. Now, there was some stuff that was drilled into me. You know, we're all made up differently. And I didn't know I had a high energy level and that I was supposed to do positive things with it. I thought we were just living here, just living. And you got to work and you got to be serious and you got to this, but I want to have fun. I want to have fun. And I didn't know that it was okay to do some of this. And there's a balance in there somewhere. Somehow I missed what those people down there at that structure in Little Rock at 12th in Louisiana were saying. I missed it. I would look at the Bible and I would read the Bible and it did not mean anything to me. It did not mean, I mean, I love Corinthians and I love Romans, okay? I love those. Those are words that I can understand. But the rest of it, it was about begat and begat and begat and begat, and they lost me. Just forget that. So I was a wannabe, I guess. I used to, when I'd introduce myself, I'd say, my name is Margaret, and I'm a little girl from Little Rock. It didn't matter if I was 40 or 50 or 60, it's a little girl from Little Rock. Because that's always how I've considered myself, just a little girl. And I don't care what y'all think about it, this is how I feel, and I don't ever want to lose this feeling. If I do, we all better get worried. You know, I told you I'll be 65 years old in January, and there are more of the time than not, not as much as I did, but more of the time than not, I still feel like a little girl, and I wonder what I'm going to do when I grow up. And I'm retired, unquote, quote unquote, and having a ball. That's what life is all about. So I went down there and came back, and things began to happen in my life. And in this alcoholic marriage, there were all kinds of things that happened. And I don't cut anybody any slack anymore. I don't have anything that I have to prove to anybody anymore. I sure hope I don't hurt somebody's feelings, because if I find out I have, it absolutely crushes me. It absolutely, absolutely terrifies me. I would never intentionally do something to hurt anybody. But I'm going to tell you something. I am passionate about this program. This program saved my life, and it saved the lives of all of the people that I know and love today. And it will work for anyone. It will work for any alcoholic that works it. There's the key. You got to work this program. You can't just pick this book up or go sit in meetings. You've already heard that addressed. There are certain steps that we must take, and half measures avail us nothing, and I am proof of that. I half measured it for 6 years. I didn't even half measure. It was more 1/10 measure. And so some of these things that I know today that I didn't know back then, the cunning, wily personality of an alcoholic woman, or woman, I don't know, whatever. This abuse that we hear talked about today. Well, I don't know about anybody else, but I know about my life. He was an alcoholic of the worst kind. I was an alcoholic of the best kind. I cleaned up. You know, we clean up and we go out and we put a smile on our face. There's something about a woman, you know, taking a bath and putting on whatever that good cologne is that Arlene wears, and our lipstick, our paint, and our, you know, war paint, and our pretty little clothes, and we just walk and talk like everybody else. Nobody knows you got a hangover so bad you'd like to kill somebody right in front of you. Nobody knew down there at that bank where I worked that I didn't steal money from the bank. I stole time. I stole time. That's what I stole. Then I'd go home in the evening, and sometimes at 9:30 in the morning. When I came to you, I had no resentments. None. Not me. Not me. I'm happy little Margaret. I'm not mad at nobody. Everybody's wonderful but me. Poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. I found out that I had a lot of resentments. There have been different points in time as to who was at the top of the list. But this man, I have had my ribs broken. I've had cigarettes put out on my face. I've gone to work with black eyes and wearing sunglasses. Is that abuse? I think that's abuse. I think that would just fit right in the legal domestic abuse charge today. Yes, that would fit in just fine. But my system would not allow me to tell anyone what happened or what was going on. And the reason was because I provoked the hell out of that man. I was like a little chihuahua after him. Beep, 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 beep. Because when we married, I met him at Baylor, and he married somebody else, and I married somebody else, and then we both ended up back in Little Rock at the First Baptist Church. Oh, isn't that wonderful? You know, Mama's so pleased, and we were both singing in the choir, and he started showing up at the house. And she says, I don't know why y'all don't go on and get married. You're together all the time anyway. And I thought to myself, I don't like you anyway. I think, just believe a will, and we did. And that's about how it happened. How in the world, you know, these relationships are so wonderful. It's a kick. It's better than some of these books that I've been reading. Anyway, life goes on, and that's how we lived. We set up battle. We really set up battle. And then I ran into a friend of mine downtown one day that we had triple dated in high school and had a big time. Hadn't seen her in years. And we started visiting on the phone and found out she was married to a guy that was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ew. And she was going to this thing called Al-Anon. And what's that? And she told me what it was, family and friends of alcoholics, blah, blah, you know, all that. And you don't tell folks your problems. Do not tell folks your problems. That's, you know, the 50s stuff and the home that I came from and a lot of y'all came from. And I wrote down when I'm supposed to end, but I didn't write down when the middle is. So I hold a finger up. Okay, we got to be sober then. So I started telling her a little bit about what was going on. My little heart was just broken all the time. All the time. And I got three little boys. They're three little boys, and they're doing football, and I'm working, and he's drinking and staying out all night, and I'm checking the lipstick on the collar and checking the car, and he's got a bottle under the seat, and I get his bottle and take it in the kitchen, put it in the pantry in the potato sack because we don't have enough money, you know, and I got to have my booze, and so we're stealing from each other. And I mean, all this game stuff is going on. So I began to tell her some of these things that are going on, and she says, Margaret, she says, you need to come to Al-Anon. And I said, oh, really? And she said, yeah. And she says, and I know how you are, and I didn't know that y'all told everybody this. I thought, I'm so special. She says, you need to come for six times before you say this is not for me. And so I did. I did that. And I didn't like y'all because I had a 30-day at-a-glance calendar, and I wrote down everything he did on that. Now, I don't know why I did that. I just felt like I might need that information at some point in time. And I kept it under the bottom of my ironing stack. Now, I was like Phyllis Dillard. My kids were like 8, 10, and 12, and I hadn't ironed since they were babies. So we had a lot of ironing going on, you know, piled up here. And I've got that 30-day at a glance calendar stuck under there. Well, I took my calendar up to that Al-Anon meeting, and they would not let me even talk about that. And I thought that was so rude. They just did not understand. Those women just did not understand. But I went. I can follow directions until I get tired of it. Until something else, like the little calf in the field and the butterflies come along, and you just follow the little butterflies off, especially if they're wearing cowboy boots. Oh, yeah. And the music's just right. And the mood's just right and all that. So what happened there was I got to know some people in Al-Anon and in AA, and we had started, our family had been started camping. I've already told you we didn't have any money, but get this, we had a Mercedes parked in the driveway and a 15-foot Glastron boat with a 125 black Merc on it. Now, does that make sense to y'all? Yeah. Made sense to me at the time. You know, we'd come home in the evening, and I'd pick the kids up from wherever they were and come home, and the electricity would be off. And they'd say, Mommy, write a check. So, you know, there's after-hours places you get those utilities turned back on. So I would go write a check in an account that didn't have any money, and on the way across town to get the utility turned back on, I would stop, and I'd get a six-pack of beer or a fifth of whiskey. I've never bought a pint or a half pint. Never. That never entered my mind to do that. It just didn't. And that's how we lived. That is how we lived. And so then I'm going to Al-Anon these six times, and I'm, oh, we started camping because it was inexpensive. That's a joke, too. But this is back before the days of electrical stuff in the parks and all that. And we eventually, if you go camping enough, and we did that for 10 years at Lake Washita at Brighty Mountain, and you get to know people around you. Well, guess what? Some of the people that were camping a couple of sites down were some of these people that he was alcoholic and she was Al-Anon, and you just get to mingling, and there they are. But through this experience, I got to know some more people in AA and some more people in Al-Anon. And there was a couple that was mutual friends of some other friends of ours, and it was Hazel and Orville. And one Saturday morning, see, he was so bad. And I tell you all these sad stories. And some people knew about some of this stuff going on. And it was poor Margaret. No wonder she drinks. And so, anyway, one Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, oh, and I never drank beer before noon. And I never drank bourbon before 5 o'clock. Couldn't be an alcoholic. I never drank every day. Couldn't be an alcoholic. I had a cousin that was an alcoholic. And that's the only other known alcoholic in the family, admitted, until I started giving birth. And so anyway, we got up this one Saturday morning, and by 10:30, I was drunk, and he took the kids and left. Now, that was different. And the Al-Anon women, there were two real things that I got out of that stint right there. One was your ODAT book. And in August, and I read it in sobriety. And these little whiny crybaby girls that come to me today that are married or have significant others or whatever in the world you want to call what you're living with, you know, they come whining about this, and I say, go to Wall Street Center and buy an ODAT book and read it. And I don't believe in reading five meditation books. You get one meditation book. But in that case, when you got relationship deal, an alcoholic, whatever, he helped me. That thing in August in that little ODAT book, I think it's from King Lear. The king said, the horror of that moment I shall never forget. The queen said, you will if you don't make a memorandum of it. And the first thing I thought about when I read that was that calendar. I didn't understand. I had no conception of what was really going on, what was starting to happen inside of me. Don't tell me, leave him alone. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me, do this. You know, I say about following directions. There's a line in there somewhere. It's just got to be acceptable to me. And what I know now today about myself is that I have to go through enough pain to get there to surrender before I can follow you. And I'm so sorry to report, I still have to do that today. I still have to do that. I surrender a lot faster because my tolerator is broken, totally broken today. I don't have to do all that anymore. So anyway, he left. And the other thing that the Al-Anons told me was to pay your telephone bill. Pay your telephone bill. I thought, pay your telephone bill? What about the electric and the gas and those other things that get caught off? Well, I found out why I pay your telephone bill, because there came that morning that I needed that phone. And it was working. And I called, and Hazel answered, and I said, Hazel, I need to talk to Orville. She said, Oh, Margaret, I'm so glad you called. And they were so sweet and so loving, both of them. And I said, I need to talk to Orville. And Orville got on the phone, and he said, yeah, I said, Orville, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he said, where are you? I said, I'm at home. And he took the kids and left. And he said, well, can you drive? Have you ever seen a drunk that can't drive? Now, we lived on the west side of town, and they lived on the southwest side of town, which was way across town. And I almost made it. I almost made it to their house. I was 65th Street. It's Boulevard kind of a thing, and it has those great big island things. And I was driving a 55 Dodge, I think it was, and I pulled up. I mean, I am sloppy, snot-faced drunk. I really am. But I can pull it together for a minute and do it before I was having blackouts, didn't know what they were. You just go to sleep and you don't remember things. So I ran up on that median, and the left tires on that car, I think they're called the axles, just bent or something. Anyway, that big old thing was just like a boat. It just went boom. It was like a boat that just hit the land. Just boom. There I was. And all these cars are going past me. And guess what I did? Oh, yeah, did what we do. We girls, I just started crying. Oh, I'm caught. Well, that was it. I was caught with my britches down. That was in public. Everybody was going to know about Margaret now. Oh, my gosh. Somebody's going to see me. What would Mama say? Oh, that was what would Mama say? So this car comes by with a carload of kids, and Orville and Hazel had a daughter and a son, and it was the daughter. And I looked at her, and she says, "Miss Brown, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "I'm trying to get to your house." And so they took me, and the upshot is that Orville took Dick and me to our first AA meeting. And it was the old 120 Hafe group, which is still around today. And that's touted to be the oldest group west of the Mississippi. I don't know if it is. I'm not trying to vie any contest about the biggest, best, oldest. I don't care. I hope you think yours is the biggest and the best and the everything. If it's not, don't go somewhere else and ruin another group, for God's sake. Stay there and make it the best. So don't get preaching again. I'm doing very well, you all. A lot of discipline from this program, discipline. So I went, and it was just awful. It was just nasty. All these old people. I was early 30s. No young people. Hardly any women. Lots of old men. Lecherous old men. There was a woman sitting next to me that the whole time this man was standing up there talking, it was a speaker meeting, she had a purse that's as big as the one I carry now, and she kept going through that purse the whole meeting. She'd get that purse, and she'd scramble it, and then she'd put it down. Then she'd get it back up, and I'd think, this is so embarrassing. And that poor old man that was up there telling that story, he kept talking about setting a clock to take a drink. And can you tell I wasn't ready? I was not ready for this program, and I was assigned a sponsor, and guess what else? That woman is still sober today. Therefore, her sponsorship of me was 100% effective. That woman is still sober today. A couple of years later, while I was out there still doing more research, I found it necessary to call her at 2 o'clock in the morning and tell her what I thought about her. Which was not a good feeling that I had about her at that time. And then after I came to you and started working these 164 pages in my life, I got to make amends to that lady because I remembered that. I did a lot of stuff in blackouts, and especially in the middle of the night. Whoa, that was a dangerous time. Nothing good happens after midnight. We laugh about that. It's the truth, though. So I went back out, and we've got, can't tell that. I want to so bad. You would love it. I just got to talk about me. I do not understand people. Well, when I went back out, I was in here for a few months, didn't like you, didn't like your what you did, and I wanted to drink. And so I went out, and I would drink for 2 years at a time. I didn't just go and think, oh, I want a drink and have a drink and whatever one night and then go pick up a chip the next morning. No, I'm more hard-headed than that. And then 2 years later, he's gone and there's a new him. And my whole life had changed. Had enough money to pay all the bills all the time. Lived in one of the most beautiful homes in Little Rock, Arkansas, up on a big mountain. I felt if I reached out, I could touch the hand of God. Now, see, I had that spiritual thing from childhood. It was implanted in there. There was no way I would ever get away from it. That's how I got caught up with so much guilt, shame, and remorse. Because I knew in my heart of hearts a lot of the stuff that I was doing was not good. Not good stuff. But I'm a pleasure seeker, and if it looks like it's going to feel good or make us happy, we're going to do it. We're just going to do it at all costs. What does it say? We roar through people's lives. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. Why did you hurt my feelings so bad? Well, because you little girl, you were a bad girl in the first place. You mean it's me? It's my responsibility? I don't think so. I don't think so. Took a long time to break all that crap down because of the hard life that I'd had. So I'm in a new deal. Got everything I always thought. I had a man that I said, if I just had a man, I lived by some principles. If you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back twice as bad, because I was a fine little Christian girl and I knew the right way. And we were supposed to go to church on Sunday. And just because you wanted to go over to so-and-so's house on Saturday night, we all drank so much, it's your fault that we couldn't get up and take those kids to church and Sunday school. That's how that goes, isn't it? Yeah. Then if I could just find a man that would put his arms around me and tell me that he loved me and that everything was going to be all right. I am still looking for that today. That's not really true either. And if I had enough money to pay all the bills all the time, well, guess what? I got all the things that I had, that I wanted. I got them all. Not enough. Not enough. Not the right kind. We traveled all over the world. We had cruises. We had foreign lands. I had beautiful clothes, beautiful jewelry, just all these material things. And he was a fine man, and he's not an alcoholic. So a couple of years into that marriage, and what it did for me is it gave me more money to buy more booze. And so I bought my bourbon by the half. Early times is my drug of choice. Yes, and you know why? Because you can taste it. If you can't taste it, it ain't working. Weller and water is not wonderful. Tried a bunch of them. They all gave me the feeling, but there's more. So I got concerned. He kind of didn't like my drinking so much, and we've got teenage kids now. By the way, he had 6 and I had 3. And I love the children. I love the children. I still love the children. The children are what make the thing go. The children are what keeps the thing going. And that is true in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is why I'm always so concerned about the children. And I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm going to tell you some more about it in just a minute. I can't get my kids sober. God knows I've tried. But you can. And you know what the flip side of that is? You can't get your kids sober. But I can. And I'm saying that totally wrong. That's something that I came in when I started sponsoring these little girls. When I came in and stayed, had my last drink, I started trying to sponsor these little girls and they wouldn't get sober. And I was telling a couple of guys one evening something about, well, Mark, what are you doing? Well, I'm making your coffee and I'm trying to sponsor these girls, but I can't get them sober and I think I'm not going to do it anymore because it hurts too much. And he shook his finger in my face. I got to have somebody shake their finger in my face before you get my attention. He says, and that's not all. You never will get them sober. Only God can do that. But we are the instrument through which God works. Joan and I were laughing about channeling before we came in here. Don't do any channeling, don't know nothing about channeling, know a lot of people that do, don't get it, don't stand it, but yet I am a channel. You are a channel. We carry the message. What message? This message. This message right here. These first 164 pages of the book, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I come back into AA and same thing. I signed a sponsor, same deal, didn't like it. It changed some. More women were in a couple of years. They're just coming in flux there in the 70s and May, and it's happening again. We are getting more people in AA in Little Rock. I don't know about Memphis or wherever y'all are from, but we are getting a horde of them in right now. It's just wonderful. Then I woke up one day in April, and I'd really settled into a pattern of every other day drinking. I had to keep going. I had to keep going for this family. It was not good. It was all real sick. Most of those kids were teenagers. It was real hard. And I don't know how that man did it. I really don't. He didn't go to Al-Anon. He went, after I came to the program, he went to conventions with me. But anyway, he tolerated it, I guess. I don't know what he did. But I got scared. I found out through inventory making that marriage was a marriage of financial and economic, and I mean of financial and emotional security. That's why I married him. I was afraid of not having any money, and I was an emotional cripple, and I had to have somebody take care of me. And so some things happened, and I came to you one more time. And I was given a lady who, bless her little heart, was one of the sickest little ladies in Little Rock, only I didn't know it. She was beautiful physically. She was the sweetest, dearest woman I have ever known in my life. And she drank, but she also took big-time prescription drugs. And back in the 70s and before, these things were not addressed at all. But everybody knew that Betty was like that. And what happened was that Betty stayed all right just long enough to guide me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't come in here willing to do everything that she said. At some of these we balked. That's what the book says. At some of these I balked. The fourth step I balked. I just couldn't get down to doing it. Did not want to write all that stuff down. And I kept thinking, I'll do it when we go to Hawaii, and I'll do it on the beach at Maui. That's what I'll do. Well, of course, that didn't happen. But I'll tell you that it happened for me just like it's happened for you and will happen for you if you're in a place where you're working the steps, and it'll happen for countless others. If you really want what we have, and if you really want to stay sober and have more recovery, the pain of not doing it will drive you to do it. It will enable you to do it. Excuse me. We are not driven. Yeah, we really are. So I did that, and life goes along and makes reference to the rigorous honesty. Rigorous honesty. A lot of things happened in the first couple of years of sobriety. Home group's real important. If you don't have a home group, you're missing out on some big stuff. Get a home group if you don't have one. Like I said, back in those days, they assigned us sponsors, and we were welcomed into that group. And that was my home group. And that was where I served in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there was a meeting on Friday nights that met out Highway 10, and it was a little meeting. It was this Pinnacle Mountain group. And I could fall off that mountain, and back in those days, Highway 10 was two-lane, and I could going out Highway 10, Pinnacle Mountain group on Friday night, or I could go into town to Cosmopolitan, which was my home group, just either way. But I just loved that little group out there. They met in a pine-paneled room in an old church, and it was just such a warm, it was a smaller group, and it was such a warm feeling. But this was my home group, and this was where I was serving, and this was where I was doing all this stuff. So time goes along, and some things happened in that big house, and I started losing weight. I'm going to the meetings. I'm trying to work with people. I have a job. We've got all these kids. I'm cooking. I'm doing the house. I'm doing all this. I'm doing trips with him. I'm doing all this. And he came home one evening before I did, and he said, we need to talk. He says, well, I'm really worried. And this started the next week of us sitting at the kitchen table and both of us crying. Both of us crying. He says, you are so unhappy. And I said, yes, I am. But I was trying to do right because I was working these steps in my life, and I knew I'd been mean to him, and I knew I'd done things in all the marriages that I'd had that I shouldn't have done. I owed so much amends and so many amends to so many people. But also I was told, you don't jump up and run out and tell everybody you're sorry, because they already know that. What people want to see about me and my amends is what I do. Now what are you going to do? You recognize it. You know the character defects that are involved. And oh, by the way, I have never had an issue. I don't have any issues. I don't think I'll ever have an issue as long as I am in this program. What I have are character defects and opportunities for growth. That's what I have. And so we decided to part. He said he wouldn't stay in that house. He moved in it to stay. And I said, okay, fine, you can do that. Stay there. And I moved into a little house on a street named Bluebird. Now, you talk about God stuff. Everybody has their own feelings about this sort of thing. I don't believe God turns steering wheels. I don't believe anything like that. I believe God gives me courage. I believe God gives me strength. I believe that God throws up red flags, and there's a gentle pressure on my conscience, and then if I get a hurting in my gut, that's really big time. And I think that's how God works in my life. But I moved into this little house, and it was an AA house. And didn't lock the door. AA people came and went. And I was so lonely. I had let you into my life, but I was about 2.5 years sober, and I think everybody goes through these periods in their sobriety, and I wish I could take these young people and I wish I could just take them in my arms and say, if you'll just hang on, this is going to pass, and you're going to be so happy. You are going to be rocketed into a fourth dimension of living of which you could never, never, never know in your wildest dreams. And I dated an AA, and it was awful, and I hooked up with some guy that had long-term sobriety, and I learned how to date an AA, and we went to this Sellers group over in Hot Springs on Friday nights, and AA'd, and then we'd go downtown to the Belle de Rose and dance for a while, and then we'd come back to Little Rock, and we went in groups, we went in droves, we went in flocks, and we'd go to cross the state line, go down to Beaumont, Texas to a roundup, and like I said the other night, heard some of the most fabulous speakers. I was already going to the conventions, and I learned to do the Cotton Eye Joe. We are not all so serious. Please, for God's sake, don't be so serious. What does it say in the 12 and 12? What is Rule 62? Don't take yourself so seriously. Get happy. Put a smile on your face and plaster it there where you feel like it or not. It might grow on you. Yeah. So we did all that, but, oh, God, I was lonely. This little girl just did not have to know how to live alone. I slept single in the double bed that first night and kept waiting to be scared. And I wasn't. Dolly Parton's song had come out, and I just kept laying there waiting to be scared that first night I lived in that house. But then, you know, Darla used to call them the day days. The day days come when there's nothing going on except get up and go to work and get the kids and take the meals and all that stuff. And the day days come, and I was so lonely. And I would get up on Saturday morning, and oh, that was the worst. The weekends were the worst. What do? There's nobody there to say, what do you want to eat for dinner tonight? Spaghetti. I don't want spaghetti. There's nobody there to argue with. There's nobody there to... There's nobody there to say, what do you want to watch on TV? Do you want to go to a movie? And the Al-Anon women, I'm so sorry, y'all, I just hated your guts one more time. And it wasn't about that. It was about seeing happy relationships in this program, and I didn't have one. And you show me some little old girl or some little old boy that's a single and alone, and that's what we all want. Doesn't it say so? It says somewhere. I can't remember where right now, if it's the big book or this book or what book. You know, we're not meant to be alone. But I believe, for me, that I had to go through the alone time in order to be able to do the relationship time. I believe that that was part of my dues and fees. I'd get up on Saturday morning, I'd mow a strip of grass, and I mean, I was physically overcome with this loneliness. Oh, God. And I'd have to sit down and cry. And I'd get up and I'd mow another strip of grass, and I'd sit down and cry. Be careful what you pray for. Went to a meeting on Sunday nights at UALR. That was a big book study. And I'd heard about this man. You know, this is the way it is. You know, some guy comes in AA. I was in a discussion meeting about sex. Have y'all ever been in a discussion meeting about sex? That's in the big book. I think it's a good thing to do from time to time. I think it's important who's chairing the meeting so that it stays right on the topic and right down the line. But it's something that's looked on in a lot of places as taboo and it's something that needs to be talked about because it's real. And I heard a woman say that her recovery just catapulted when she realized within herself that she had to stop viewing every male that walked in the clubroom door as a potential sex partner. Now, that's down to the core, isn't it? And I thought, you know, that sounds like a really good thing to do. And so I was beginning to, things were beginning, my attitudes were beginning to change, my perceptions were beginning to change. Some people think you come in here and you just work these steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, through 12, and then you just, it's just wonderful, everything's fine. Well, we've only just begun the first time you work the steps, the only just begun. And I was surrendering in so many areas, and just over and over and over and over, something else would pop its head up, another character defect. Got to do this, do this, do this. But anyway, I was at that Sunday night meeting, suiting up and showing up, and I had heard about this guy that had come in, and he was a veterinarian, and he was single. Well, all the little girls go, boing, you know, and said, but he gets to the meetings at 1 minute before 8, and he leaves at 1 minute after 9. And I thought, well, I'm not interested in that. See, the program had really gotten hold in my life. It was part of me by this point in time. And he started coming out to the Pinnacle group. And I was going on Friday nights. And he called me one Saturday morning and told me that he liked what I said at the meeting the night before. Well, what happened there is that a few months later, we decided to get married, and a few months later, we were married. And Robert had a year of sobriety, and I had 4. And everybody said, oh, my God, this is not going to work. And that was 22 years ago. Let me tell you why it's worked for us. The reason that it's worked for us is that somehow or other, God got a hold of him and said, this one is ready. And he came in here and he started getting this thing. And he understood the principles and he was trying to live with them. And before we tied the knot, we agreed on 3 things. And I never can remember what all 3 of them are now. Is that called a marriage of convenience? I don't think so. We determined that we would be God-centered, first of all. First and foremost, keep God in the center of our marriage. The next thing, and these are not in order, the next thing is that we would not bring and play old tapes. No old tapes of old relationships. You know, I was always treated that way by whatever, so it's going to be that way again. There are so many things that have happened in my past that even today, some instance can occur, and it brings up a feeling that I had that I'm going to react like I used to for a second, but I don't like feeling that way, and something grabs hold of me and says, you don't have to do that. Cut that out, girl. And I think, that was in a past life. I don't have to do that. And like I said, the third one, I can't really remember what it was. Must have been one I didn't like a lot. But anyway, we've done that. My mother, our roles reversed. The last 2 years of her life, I was able to take care of her. I had to do a lot of things I really didn't want to do. She didn't speak to me the last 4 months of her life. She was stroking, and it wasn't pleasant. My brother had moved to Oklahoma. Oh, ye who has never done anything wrong. You know, I went through... Honestly, I have been through a lot of why me, God. And I like to tell the whole truth as much as I can because of the misconceptions that I'd come to these meetings and I'd come to these conventions and I'd hear about got my wife back, got my husband back, got my dog back, got my car back, and I've made $1 million. Well, those things never happened for me quite like that. And I didn't understand why. Oh, and I'd go to the meetings on Saturday night, and they used to be closed. AA speaker meetings, and they made them an open speaker meeting, and the couples would go out to dinner and they wouldn't ask the single ones. And I have tried to remember that in sobriety. We are all inclusive, and our house is an AA house, and we have people in, and they come and don't take them in. We had to do that twice. Don't take them in. Book says don't do that, or says if you do it, be careful or something. but anyway, so Mama and I, you know, the peace came about Mama, my youngest son. When he was 16 years old, he got 3 DWIs in the first 5 months he was sober. I mean, the first 5 months he was after he turned 16. All three of my boys are absolutely adorable. They are, you can have 15 out of the same pod and they're going to look different, but they are absolutely adorable. They all have their own personalities. And this little one, he was the one that was so affectionate. And I'm a hugger and I'm a kisser and I'm an I love you today. My family didn't do that when I was growing up. And I love it. Oh, I love it. We need the touch. We need the touch. I need to feel you. If I can't feel you, then I can't do it. Because you told me that I don't have to do anything by myself anymore. And I took you for real and for sure. So anyway, he goes along and he's got big trouble. And he was a rock star. Oh, big time, big time. Lots. He was in Eddie Murphy's 87 Raw Tour. I've got a black leather jacket with suede on it, and it's got big old red across the back, and I go to these rock concerts with these kids. I saw the Rolling Stones in Little Rock on their whatever tour, and they were great. I wore my red bandana, Brooks's black leather jacket, my black boots, and my bunch, the old ones and the young ones, get scared to be around me sometimes. They said, Margaret, take that red bandana off. Somebody's going to shoot you. I'm going to have fun in here, and I'm going to do the best I can to have it without hurting somebody. There's a little story, you know, these opinions in the back of the book, there's a little story back there that says there's only one law, that's the law of love, and there's only two sins. One is to do something that would harm or injure somebody else, and the other is to do something that would harm or injure me. Works for me. My little boy drank too much. Got into big trouble in a bee lounge down in Victoria, Texas. Mom saved him. I did. Robert was in on it too. But I'm the leader of the pack. And brought him home, and he went through the Serenity House in Little Rock. And Brooks didn't drink anymore. But there's other stuff out there. He was Mr. AA for about 6 months, as long as his probation lasted. And then he got hooked up with some bands and started traveling the country and started doing all that started. And it all went on. Some of it was good and some of it wasn't good. And then in the spring of 1987, they were in Los Angeles and they were coming back to Little Rock. And we We could always tell when it was, we knew about when they were supposed to come in. And we could always tell when Brooks was getting close because the little girls would start calling the house. And, you know, when I was young in AA, and I had a crisis moment, everything in my life was a crisis when I first came, an old-timer would grab hold of me and they'd say, "What is the worst thing that can happen in your whole life?" Well, the worst thing that could happen in my life was, you know what, it was just for something to happen to one of my kids. That was the very worst thing that could happen. And then you come back from there because nothing's as bad as that. So Brooks is coming back, and Robert and I were taping then, and we went up to Fayetteville to tape Fayetteville Young People, FIPIG, Fayetteville Young People in AA. Got up there, we got a call from somebody back in our hotel room, the light was blinking, and it was a call saying that they had found Brooks, and he was in Little Rock. They had put an all-points bulletin out in Los Angeles and in Little Rock for him. Everybody was looking for him everywhere. Some of the kids in Little Rock, we found out later, he had come in on a plane the day before that, and he'd gone around telling everybody goodbye, only they didn't know he was telling them goodbye. And he jammed with them and stayed up all night, and he didn't drink. He drank Gatorade. There's other stuff out there, and there's other programs out there for that stuff. I've tried to help some of those people, and I can't help them. You don't drink, I can't help you. I have surrendered to that. I almost killed a little drug addict trying to help her. I'm not going to soapbox about that, but that's serious stuff. So I went into a black hole that I hope I never have to go into again in my entire life. And I want to jump out of the hotel window, and I knew I couldn't do that. Robert said, "Mart, sit down." Got a couple out in the hall from Jonesboro, good friends of ours, and they brought me back to Little Rock. And I said, "He has to stay here." Clancy was going to talk there that night on Saturday night. And I said, "Robert, you're going to stay right here, and you're going to tape this thing." And so that's what he did. I came back, got my son, one son in from California, was in the Navy. And the middle one, the happy wanderer, the one that Robert told you where he is last night, he was roaming then. We didn't know where he was. He didn't know his brother was dead for 3 months. And we buried my baby. And I still miss him today. And you know what saved me about all that mourning stuff? You bet, you better shed those tears. Kittaloo told me. She shook her finger in my face. And she says, "I know you. I know how you are. You're going back to work, and you'll go on and act like nothing's happening. One day, 6 months from now, when you fall out in Kroger, they're going to say, 'What's the matter with her?' Because they won't remember. You better keep talking about this and be careful who you talk to, because everybody doesn't want to hear about it." So I have still talked about it. Chuck Chamberlain's got a set of tapes called In All Our Affairs. It's this book, the same book, the same words as New Pair of Glasses. I've listened to him a million times, and I hear something I've never heard each time. I was driving down to see Darla and Bub by myself down through the old cotton fields back home one day, and I heard them say there's something beyond acceptance. I hate acceptance. I don't like it. I won't talk about it. It's not a part of I don't have a program. My program got me here. I can't get in. I don't know anything about acceptance, and I knew there was something else, and it's approval. Well, I almost drove off in the bar ditch. I said, "How do you approve of your son committing suicide?" And then later on, a few months, I was sitting in a meeting. Show up. You're going to miss it. You're going to miss your miracle. You are going to miss what God has for you if you don't show up. Sit in that seat, whether you think you want to be there or not. Forget law and order. Sit there. And I thought, approval of his life. I approve of his life. I'd been, why was that baby? I'm not going to have his grandchildren. I was thinking about everything we were going to miss. I was not thinking about one of the great things that happened in the 20s. I am so blessed. Man, I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I got to cut this thing off. John is going to kill me. Or he's going to cut me off is what he's going to do. I wish I could go on telling you stuff all afternoon. I ain't even begin to tell you what this program is and what it, in my life and what it means. Just keep on coming back. Don't quit. Went through a thing at my home group. Didn't like them the last 2 years. Those people weren't doing it right. They were not doing it right. I quit going to business meetings. Showed them. Something just kept eating away at me in this last 6 months and year. In the last several months, I started walking around the house looking in the mirror. Every time I'd pass the mirror, I'd say to myself, and sometimes out loud, "Are you looking at the problem?" I didn't like saying it at first, but then I just kept doing it. That's discipline, self-discipline. We lack self-discipline. Get some going. Just kept saying that. They were going to have a group inventory. Lots of things changing in that group. It's on the down now, but it's been in existence a long time. And whether I'm there or not, that group's going to go on. It's, you know, but I don't have to be a detriment to it. And I have it planted in my head. I'm not going to go somewhere else with my attitude and mess up some other group. I'm not going to do it. So I went to that group inventory, and I took the best attitude that I could, and I was so glad that I went, because guess what? There was only one other woman there, one of the ladies that I sponsor, and I didn't tell her she had to go. She has 24 years of sobriety, and she went because she wanted to be there. Two other guys and the chairman. That was the only people that was there for the group inventory. And then I determined I'd go to the business meeting. Something just came all over me. I don't get those feelings very much anymore. There's no guy in the group that used to call and say, "I want to stay green in this program." How do you do that? How do you do that? Surrender, surrender, surrender. That's how I do it. And it just came to me, along with the "are you looking at the problem" thing, let it begin with me. To me today, all of these things, carrying the message, what I'm supposed to do is let it begin with me, stop my bitching and complaining and criticizing, cut it out, no more, can't do, no, don't want to hear that negative stuff. Talk about the good, let's get this thing going, let it begin with me, and sponsorship. Sponsorship. Sponsorship, be available, get out there and... You're not going to go out and grab a hold of one. That's just, that'll happen every once in a while, but it's the exception rather than the rule. You show up. You occupy that seat, and you keep going. Same thing happened to Bob about the gratitude thing in Louisville. I mean, we used to do it. Why don't we do it? Well, let's do it. Let's do it now. Let's stop talking about the way it used to be, and let's get it going today. Let it begin with me. I love you all so much. Please keep coming back.